Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
The episode now standing at Platform 1 is episode 38 of 40, season 1 of the Podcorn Kernels podcast. This does mean that we will be having a brief hiatus between seasons to rebuild the fortifications. But fear not, this is with you in mind, the listener, the very reason we do this. And we appreciate you dearly, so have faith we will be back. And we will be entertaining you until the very last breath.
On today's episode, we will be talking about A Million Miles Away. This is a 2023 film directed by Alejandra Marquez Abella and stars Michael Peña, Rosa Salazar and Garrett Dillahunt. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. A biopic about Jose M. Hernandez and his path from a farm worker to becoming an engineer and an astronaut. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Don't let your dreams out of sight. Fly that rocket deep into the night. Keep on fighting, let your hopes soar. Do everything you can until you can do no more.
Fight for your race, tackles in space.
Step for man, a million for me, stick to the plan. I'll make you see what are stars for. I simply must know. I'll find this and more when I finally get to go.
Fight for your race, tackles in space. Fight for your race, tackles in space.
Let's start with some facts about the film. While in orbit on his space shuttle mission in 2009, Jose Hernandez became the first person to use the Spanish language in space while tweeting.
What purpose does this serve?
I don't know. Maybe showing off that he can get decent internet connection in space?
Whilst tweeting?
Yeah.
So you mean he just wrote something in space and the internet sent it down to Earth and someone read a TikTok from space? Tweet?
A tweet?
Sorry, tweet.
A Spanish tweet from space?
A parakeet.
Now, I only included that because I was like, how mad is it that you can get internet up there? If it's stormy where I live, the internet's shot to shit. I can't do anything.
Well, but internet's is satellites. And they are all in space.
What?
Yeah.
So they're right at the source. So it's probably the best internet.
Yeah. So there's satellites that, say, feed oil rigs with internet. You still have to put a server on the oil rig to receive the internet, but it's essentially the satellites that give the coverage of Earth. Long wave, short wave. What's that Elon Musk one? Starlink?
I don't know, man. I feel foolish, though, because I feel like I should have known that that's where the internet comes from. Is that why they call it the cloud?
I don't know about the cloud part.
Yeah.
Cloud just means like a place where you can save stuff that isn't on your physical hard drive or SSD solid state drive.
I just think if you're up in space, why are you bothering with social media? I guess a lot of people are going to be interested in Wagwanin in space. So it's a good place as any to be sending tweets and stuff, I suppose.
Well, space travel now is nothing to do with conquering space or finding a new place to live, because they know that to be an impossibility now. It's more to do with the social aspect, isn't it? It's more to do with we can get this rocket in space and then we can put a car in space and let it float away. Branson flying a plane into the stratosphere or just above the atmosphere is not going to space. I don't care what anyone says.
So
it's all a gimmick now.
Yeah, it's become like a novelty, a bragging rights sort of thing.
Yeah, it's just tech companies, isn't it? Who can get the best coverage? Who could, you know, and maybe some meteorology. So like anticipating weather and stuff, fair enough.
Yeah.
You might save a few lives with a hurricane warning if you can view it from space. Who's had the first wank in space?
Oh.
Think about that. That's more impressive than a tweet.
Yeah, but if you're floating around and someone's milked off,
oh.
That's going to be... Unless you catch that dog, that's going to be floating around, and someone could get accidentally bukkakeed while they're floating around.
That would be the extreme version of soggy biscuit or limp biscuit, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Someone has, though, a fact. Like, some people have been on the ISS, International Space Station, for months.
Yeah.
They definitely did something. And then maybe they even got told, like, in a little brown paper, like, top secret, like, open this when you're horny. And they open it, and it's like, all right, you're going to do a test.
What, to jip off in space?
Yeah.
Surely, I mean, if anyone out there listening knows of the first person to masturbate in space, please let us know. It makes Jose Hernandez's feat of tweeting in Spanish seem less superior.
Sounds like a What the Plot.
Yeah, it does. The cameo of the real Jose Hernandez in the film was filmed during the last day on set, which boosted the crew's spirits and set the mood for the grand finale. Did you clock him?
No.
I'm assuming...
Where was he?
I think he was, you know, when he, Michael Peña, his character was about to go into space, he gave him a little fist bump.
Yes.
I'm assuming he looked like a Hispanic gentleman.
Yes.
I'm assuming he's that sort of age. Looking at him, I was like, because I've watched it twice and then I knew that fact. I was like, who is it?
He was the one with the space scrubs on, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah. So,
little white chef hat, went, good luck, brother, or yeah, something.
So for context, in the film, Michael Peña's character, Jose Hernandez, is about to go into space, achieve a lifelong ambition of getting up into the stars. And as he goes in, there's this fella that gives him a fist bump and says, good luck. And I'm assuming...
Tacky.
Yeah. I'm assuming that's... The real dude.
That could have been a nice little Easter egg if the true story of this was done justice.
For me, the story isn't focused on his mission and what he did. Like, yeah, he went through a fair few hardships to get there. He showed great resilience and perseverance and all these things. But to me, the story is he was the first Hispanic man into space.
No, he weren't the first Hispanic.
Oh, he wasn't?
No, he was the first sort of immigration farm worker that went into space.
Oh, so someone with humble beginnings.
Someone else had already gone into space that was Mexican. Latino, so... Yeah, someone had already done it, but he was like the first to come from such low beginnings.
Yeah.
You know, getting shipped back and forth for fruit farms in California and stuff to then become an astronaut. That's the best story.
Yeah, that's like Jamie Vardy going from non-league football to the Premier League and winning the Premier League trophy,
Hundy
right?
P, yeah. Or a double amputee becoming the best striker for Man City. Almost impossible.
Yeah. I'd say
probably so. Impossible.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. I mean, Man City have got a great squad, so it would make it easier for anyone to score, I'd argue.
Yeah.
Final fact, to generate the vibration during Jose's takeoff, cinematographer Dariela Ludlow implemented the use of a device well known from television shopping advertisements in Mexico, the BioShaker.
What?
Yep.
That's lost on me.
Yeah, I tried to figure out what a BioShaker is, and from what I can... summarize and tell, it's basically a protein shaker.
So
I don't know how they implemented that to make him vibrate, but I've got to be honest, there wasn't a lot of good facts on this film, so that's what you got lumbered with.
If you're going to go into that sort of really deep sort of thinking process to build a film, then just go an extra 10 yards and make a better film.
Oh, okay.
No,
he's gone in early doors.
It's a true story. Half the work's already done. Follow the true story. Follow the biography. Don't take a poetic license and get your bio shaker and throw it in, but then also have that sort of Cheech and Chong support characters. It's fucking belittling to the struggle of the immigration worker in Mexico in the 1980s.
Go get it.
Go get that.
Is there anything you liked about A Million Miles Away?
Yeah, of course. I'm not being a total cunt.
Hit me with the good stuff.
I'll hit you with some poetry. Well, it's not poetry, but it's kind of poetic. But this film reminds me of a broken vase.
Go on.
And that would be a vase for our American cousins. But so you see some of the artwork and the beauty, but it's scattered and broken, and I do not have the glue to fix it. Now, even though the director struggled, I'd say struggled to tell this true story, some scenes did hit hard. And I found when the teacher, Mrs. Young, you know, the one from when he's younger.
Yes.
And he tells her he wants to be an astronaut, he wants to go to space. I found that when they bring her back 25 years later, the day before his launch, and this is all true.
Yeah.
And she says, I knew you'd make it. And she pulls out a photo that he drew when he was little as an astronaut. I welled up, man.
Did you?
I thought it was powerful. I thought it was really... And the fact that it's true, this is the problem. They're going to be likes that are just blended with dislikes, because that was a great scene. The true story itself is incredible. It was in the wrong hands. It was delivered by the wrong people, this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that would have been... as good as any moment in, say, the end of Green Mile, the end of Shawshank. It could have been an amazing moment. The teacher having faith in this small child, stopping his parents from having their house that they were trying to save for in Mexico so he could become an astronaut. It would have been powerful. It would have been one of the moments in films like in Big Fish when he finally tells his dad a story.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, because there was so much... What are you talking about, Ethie? Don't you know I'm local?
Yeah.
Like, there were so many distractions in this film. So many. So weird. You asked me for a like. I kind of gave you a like.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect like, but I thought that seems great. And that's why I call it a broken vase, because there's scattered elements of the film that are good, but you can't connect them.
No,
there's no glue for this film.
Yeah, I tend to agree. There's certainly several moments within the film where I'm like, I wish you'd focused your attention in the filmmaking process on this part more. Certain parts I'm like, well, that interests me. It takes an hour plus to get into the actual nitty gritty of him getting into space and the tasks and the trials and tribulations of going through that process to become an astronaut. And for the first hour of the film, I'm waiting for that to happen. And then when it does happen, it feels rushed. So I do completely agree with you. It does feel like a misstep. Like, a lot of the focus were on things that I don't think necessarily worked. And I would have liked to seen that focus put on other aspects of the film.
Yeah.
So I, you saying it's like a broken vase, I completely agree, to be fair. Yeah. Any more likes for me?
I ain't gonna lie to you, Ronnie. There ain't nothing good about this at all.
That is said by Michael Pena's character in Observe and Report. Now, this is, again, twofold like-dislike. I love Michael Pena, or Pena, however you want to pronounce it. I've always called him Pena, as in penis. I've always enjoyed him in his films. I think he's a very, very substantial supporting actor. I have not seen him very much in lead roles, but for what he has done, I just enjoy his on-screen presence. I find him very charismatic. Really interesting. I think he's hilarious. You know, he was even in The Martian, and he played a much more strange, a more believable character that was a fictional character than this real character.
Yeah.
I don't know if I believed this character, but I like him enough to have watched the film. I watched the whole film and because I enjoy him as an actor. So he's the only thing that really kept me watching.
So Pena positive, yeah?
Pena positive.
Pena positive.
Pena positive, yeah. But I just found it funny that one of his lines from Observe and Report actually heralds to this film.
I ain't going to lie to you, Ronnie. There ain't nothing good about this at all.
And that's when they're about to do heroin. Okay. Do you remember in the toilet?
Very, very vaguely.
And then that song hits, ding, 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 and they go around, beat up the skateboarders. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, like you, I watched this film, and like I've already mentioned, it took a while to get into it. And then when Michael Pena sort of started to grow into the role, I did like it. I enjoy watching him. He's personable. Like you say, he's charismatic. He's a good on-screen presence. But I don't think he, like you've already touched on, like even him, he's not big enough star to carry a weight of a film like this to make it anything more than what it ended up being.
Yeah.
I think to elevate this to being a better film, firstly, it would need to be handled better by the filmmakers and those in charge of actually making the product.
Well, he did show parts of he showed his talent in the film. There was moments where he could bring tears to his eyes and react really believable to a situation that's unfolding, but then it sort of gets ruined by them, that introduction of them, sort of like I was saying earlier, there's a certain cousins in the film that bring the idea of the film down. I don't know if it's realistic, but you know, the sort of gangbang element of the sort of Latino guys in the film, the cousins, mostly your cousins, his cousins, Rosa Salazar's cousins, and it's sort of like, hold on, am I watching a film about a guy who's trying to overcome, you know, racial issues and overcome financial issues and economic issues to go to space? Or am I watching a weird sort of 90s comedy about Mexican immigrants?
Yeah, I struggled with that as well. And especially when the person in charge, the person at the steering wheel, Alejandra Marquez Abella, is of Latina heritage. I found it odd that these characters were represented in such a way, because for me they are portrayed, like you say, in an American film, a Hollywood film, of being like Mexican gangbangers, like you say. And it's odd that it either is fairly represented and that's what these characters were like in real life, or she's buying into the own stereotype that sort of negatively objectifies her people, which is baffling.
She giving credence to stereotypes, and because we're white guys,
yeah,
do we not see the lines between stereotype and truth, or are the lines blurred? She said she took poetic license with a true story. Of my mind, you should never do that. A true story is the hardest part of the job's done. It's a true story. The best stories are true.
Well, the source material is there.
It's there.
You can add dialogue to make it more entertaining. You can add explosive scenes, CGI, whatever effects, whatever you can to bolster that story up. But like you say, if the beginning, middle and the end is already there, it's a great true story about a guy's perseverance. Amazing. Not taking no for an answer and pushing through and getting, achieving his dreams.
Who loves underdog story more than us?
No one. We're the ultimate underdogs. Yeah, we are.
We profess to be underdogs. We love being an underdog until we make it.
Yeah, and then everything changes, baby.
But strong opening.
Yeah,
strong opening. I found when I first pressed play on this film, Painter, you know, the young lad that was playing him, really interesting, showing that the film's broken into segments of ingredients that his dad's told him, the ingredients, the key to life, these are ingredients you follow. Strong opening, great music, seeing this back and forth work on farms and stuff. The scenes of his dad and the kids showing their hands with all plasters on them because they work hard. Yeah. I thought this is going to be good. Like, very strong opening. By opening, I mean 9-10 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. It is a shame. Because like we've said on this podcast many times before, you go into every film we watch and review on here wanting to enjoy it. Mm. When it starts so strong, you do strap yourself in and you're like, okay, I'm in for a treat here. This is going to be good. Our admiration for Michael Peña, the story. I know you love a space film.
Love a space film.
Yeah, I thought he was in for a good ride. And I think it's fair to say early doors that didn't seem to add up.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, have you got any more likes or shall I go on to mine?
It's the first time I've ever seen Rosa Salazar not animated. It's the first time ever. I'd only ever seen her in Lita Battle Angel and Undone.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, and it was strange because she looked exactly like I imagined she would.
Like an unanimated version of her animated
That's
self.
That's it right there.
Mad, isn't it?
Yeah, an unanimated version of herself.
Yeah. So she looked like she does.
It was weird. I was like,
fucking,
why do I know her?
Yeah,
and then I was like, oh yeah, she's animated most of the time. But yeah, to see her not animated, yeah, I found her character great. Oh, see, I can't keep doing this. My likes are becoming dislikes. I need to stop.
Man.
No, I'll cover them later. But yeah, Rosa Salazar, it's cool. Weirded me out that she looked about 60 in the first shot of this film. She had beehive haircut.
Yeah, why is she Benjamin Button? She started off looking...
Got younger
old,
and hotter.
And then when they tried to wrinkle her up, she looked younger than she did at the start. I was like, what the fuck?
And what you were saying, Pena stayed exactly the same throughout the whole film. A time of something like 20 years had passed.
Yeah, that bothered me to fuck. We spoke about it briefly earlier. So the film starts as Michael Pena's character, Jose Hernandez, as a child with aspirations of becoming an astronaut. Then he goes through the process of finishing school, graduating and all that stuff. But the problem is they have Michael Pena play, we're led to believe, between a 15 to 20 year old version of himself. No effort has been made to make him look younger. His hair's been like, is slightly different. He's got slightly longer hair and like a wispy attach when he was younger, and that's about it.
It was like Wet Hot American Summer. Have you ever seen that?
With Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd and that. They're like playing 17-year-olds, but they're like 48, 50 years old.
Yeah.
It was just like, what's that?
For me, it was like he comes out of his like, he's a young lad sort of boy racer car. And he looks exactly as he looks at, like, however old he is, 45 to 50, however old the man is. And it's like, so hang on, you're making me like leave belief at the door and just be like, that 45 year old man is a young adult. Okay, cool.
Well, this could literally have been an unbelievable true story, and not unbelievable as in well, hard to believe true story, like,
yeah,
because as you say, he gets out of this really loud sort of Latino bouncing sort of car at the start. He's got the shirt that's only got buttoned up at the top, and he's a bit, I don't know what you call it, hip, something like that, hip, yeah. Yo, I don't know what the word is,
yeah,
but he's got that sort of attitude with him, and then he's also in a suit and blazer at a science facility, and I'm like, Is this real? Did that happen, or is she taking poetic license to ridiculous? Like, oh, apart from the sombrero, the bowl of tacos, and the flag, can you tell I'm Mexican?
Yeah, yeah. It was a bit paint by numbers, dot to dot, nail on the head with that sort of stuff, wasn't it? And that's the problem when you've got him from in that sort of car bouncing, stereotype gang member car, in that get up with the shirt buttoned up at the top and the khaki trousers into a suit. Because he doesn't look any different in terms of age. You don't, it's like, is that just the day after, or is that 20 years down the line? Because there's no efforts made. Yeah, I found that maddening, just a little point, yeah. Any more likes, or shall I go on to mine?
Move on, good sir.
I think top of the pops for me in terms of likes, it is at its core a feel-good family film. Mm-hmm. A Million Miles Away tells an interesting true story that I knew nothing about. I'd say it's educational and well-intentioned, and I think it does promote important messages of not giving up, the importance of hard work, having aspirations, and how passionate persistence can help you achieve your ambitions. Mm-hmm. And I'd say this, it is worth a watch for younger viewers. I could see this being in a space where you might look for a film on a Sunday evening with a young audience, children and that, and watch a film. And I think it hits that message of don't give up on your dreams. If you want it enough, if you work hard enough, you can get there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's glazed over, it is very sugary sweet, and a lot of the film itself did grate on me, did irritate me, but at its core it is a nice sentimental, well-intentioned film.
I agree.
I guess that's its strongest selling point for me anyway. Another thing I liked about it is that you touched on it very briefly, was that five ingredient structure. We love a good food analogy on this podcast, and I enjoyed seeing a well thought out menu of goals that sets out this life plan in an easily digestible format.
Even if it was just for the halibut.
Oh, ingredients, fish, halibut, hello. I'm trying to think of one, but
Don't.
For God's sake. This sort of setup could be used as a great tool for parents looking to encourage a strategy that encourages the realising and chasing of dreams for a younger audience. Yeah. And again, these are all lovely things about the film.
Yeah.
Just unfortunately for me, the film isn't as lovely as what the narrative and the story itself is.
Mm.
It didn't dock properly.
It didn't.
No, the landing was off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah. Final like is the second half. The first half of A Million Miles Away was focused on Jose Hernandez, his family, and his juggling of responsibility, reality, and his astronaut ambitions. For me, the first two acts were really slow and generic. But when he finally gets accepted and embarks on training, my interest did pick up, and I enjoyed the film a lot more once Hernandez was getting into the nitty-gritty of getting in to space.
Yeah.
And that part of it, that always fascinates me, because we know just from general understanding, general knowledge, that to become an astronaut is a very difficult thing to do. So when it was like the montage of him going through deep water training, piloting, working hard, like that Rocky montage almost, like that, I was like, oh, my interest has peaked. The problem is that doesn't happen until halfway into the film, and by which point I'm almost half switched off. But I did like that when it was focused on him going through training camp, and then when he did get into space and the look of space, that was all lovely to look at, and it got me feeling all the feels that I should have. But then it was sort of tainted by the rest of the film, to be honest.
See, we can't say likes without a dislike coming in.
Well, because I think at its core, this is a film you should like. It's a great true story. Mm-hmm. But then the way it's made, it's hard to like.
Yes.
I'd say anyway.
Yes.
So go on then, hit me with your dislikes.
Its pace kept getting kneecapped every time it threatened to take off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And this is one of the things that really grinds my gear, and I do not want to be misunderstood by saying it, but again, because of the age-old family domestic middle of a film, I'm sick of that storyline, man, where the protagonist has made it perfectly clear in the dating phase what they want, what they were about, and what they want to do to succeed in the field that they're interested in. And the partner's all for it until it becomes a reality. Oppenheimer, JFK, World War Z, Annihilation, First Man, Interstellar, G.I. Jane, Goodfellas. These are all films that have this middle part of a film.
Go and where fucking get it.
Get it. And it annoys me because we have to stop watching this, the true story, the natural progress. Yes, the family have to sacrifice. People suffer because the husband can't come home or the wife can't come home. Because guess what, people? There's female astronauts as well, and they leave their husbands behind as well. I do not need to see it in a film. I do not need to watch the domestic of someone saying, I've been at home all day with the kids, but you want to go to space.
It's a lazy narrative that's use too much, right?
Yeah. If someone's worked all their life to achieve a dream and they tell you in the dating phase, this is what I want, and then as they are just about to get to it, you try and fuck their ticker with anxiety and talking about, like, stop fucking having kids. If you can't handle one baby, and this is both of them I'm referring to, not just the woman, I'm saying, if you can't handle one baby, why have you got now six?
Yeah, innit?
And it's getting harder and harder, and you know, you had dreams as well and stuff, yeah. But it's like, it's so boring, I hate it. Stop being the lazy middle of a film, stop it. It's time for change.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bingo.
That's a bingo.
That's spot on. In a film that's rife with stereotypes, you've got one there in terms of the stay-at-home mum, so to speak, that's against her husband chasing the dreams. Yeah. Seen it so many times. She starts off being really supportive, has a bit of a wobble, and then goes, oh, you know what, you should go and chase that thing that you told me you've always wanted to do. Just, for me, like, the peril and the struggle was him getting up to space. Mm. Now, if it's based on true story... And Jose Hernandez says his wife was a bit of a battle axe when it got closer to him actually doing what he set out to do. Then fair enough, because they're using it from real experience. But you're right, when you've seen it so many times, you're just waiting for that peril to be crowbarred in. And once it's there, you're like, well, of course this was going to happen. Oh, and then when he gets up there, you're going to resolve everything and everyone's going to be happy. And it's just, it gets tedious. You've seen it time and time again.
My two most disliked storylines ever, and they appear too much in my opinion, is... the disgruntled partner who feels sidelined so their husband or wife can achieve their goals. There's one storyline I've always despised. One of the worst case scenarios is JFK, when he's trying to get to the bottom of a disgusting conspiracy that potentially the government whacked JFK, and his wife's just going, you missed Easter as well. And you didn't come home and help with the homework. I'm trying to fucking solve a crime.
Bigger picture.
I'm trying to solve a crime.
Yeah.
And the other storyline is the kid is so upset and disgruntled that the parents, because of financial reasons or whatever, have had to move away. You made me leave my friends. You didn't care about me when you made this decision. This is my second most hated storyline.
Yeah.
The minute these storylines appear in films, I just go like, oh. I sort of, like, you don't want to see stuff like that. It's boring.
Well,
Move past it.
The problem is, there has to be other ways to tell this story. Like, the peril, that every story needs to have a peril. It needs to have an element of danger or struggle, because it's very rare to have a film that's just all suns and rainbows.
Always the middle, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and I understand in the telling of a story you need that in the narrative, but when that's the only thing, like, the peril's there. It's on pen and paper. He couldn't get to fucking NASA for whatever reason. Prejudice, just not having the right skill set yet, so he had to work towards it. The peril's already there. You don't need to throw in the wife being, like, a bit disgruntled because he's putting so much of his time into this obsession. That's marked as red.
Forgot the nappies. Yeah. This is not a film. This is a film. But that's not a storyline, that he forgot the nappies. And guess what? You don't need to be an astronaut or a police detective or the President of the United States to have that argument. You can be stacking shelves in Walmart, and if you're late home, you're still going to have that argument. It is not warranted. It does not need to be in a film.
I feel you.
It went on too long in this film.
I feel you.
It went on for, I'd say, an hour. Yeah. This whole back and forth about the struggle and, you know, your career is getting in the way of this family. Stop having babies. Stop it.
Yeah, I'd struggle to find sympathy when you've got six.
Yeah, you can't keep moaning about being bogged down with children and career aspirations. Like, if one career is bringing in the majority of the money to keep the kids fed, whether that be man or woman, then you do have to give a little bit of leeway. Maybe this is more personal. Maybe this is about me.
No, it's not.
Maybe
it's... like, in the if they stopped, like, fucking, if they closed the legs and chased the dreams, then everyone would have been happier.
You can't say that.
What?
If they close their legs, you're making out like it's only them that have got the responsibility.
All right. Yeah. If he stopped the thrust,
yes,
and she closed the legs,
excellent. You've covered both.
Yeah,
perfect.
If they stuck on a film, not this one, and entertained themselves without making pancakes, then they wouldn't have six kids to look after. She wouldn't feel overwhelmed. He wouldn't have guilt for not being at home.
Yeah,
he'd have got to go into space. She'd have got to open the restaurant. No beef. Lovely jubbly.
Yep.
But yeah, I feel you, man. Mm-hmm. Any more dislikes?
Covered it a lot, but it might be offensive to taste, I don't know. But I found some of the support characters, like his cousin Beto and Rose's two cousins, stereotypes of Mexicans from 90s films.
Yeah.
Whether that's realistic or not, I don't know, because I don't live in California or Baja, and I wouldn't know if that is a genuine depiction of them.
That's where the problem lies. Yourself and I are so far removed from that culture and that experience that we don't actually know if that is a fair representation. We have seen it so much through mainstream media that I think it's fair to say that we've been sort of tainted with a brush of that's how these groups of people are, because that's all we're seeing. And in a film that's made, directed, produced by people of that origin, that ethnicity, it's a bit like, well, either the stereotypes are right and the things I've seen in the past that I thought are problematic because I've deemed them stereotypes are correct, or a person from that heritage and background has decided to just stereotype her
or enjoys the stereotypes, finds them to be amusing,
yeah,
fun.
I'd like to learn.
Tough. It's a hard. Yeah. It's a hard line.
Mm.
Oh, and it didn't seem realistic to me that a scientist would be so obviously racist to another scientist. Like, I'm quite sure scientists are scientists because they look beyond creed, color, and religion. So you know when he first starts the job, and there's obvious racism.
Yeah.
Not the woman who thinks he's a janitor. Yeah. That, I mean, that's a ignorant, but it's a genuine mistake.
Yeah.
But like the guy's like, oh, you make copies. No, don't talk to me. Get out. And just put him away in a building somewhere. They're scientists. I find it very hard to believe that scientists that want to improve mankind and find the secrets to the universe have got time to be petty and racist.
Well, yeah, you'd like to think the most brightest minds, scientists, are basing all of their thought processes on fact, on scientific evidence. It's hard to believe that they would have this prejudice against a particular person because of his ethnicity.
And only start listening to him when he proves them wrong.
Exactly. I mean, again, it's hard to know for certain because this is based on a true story. So we don't know if that is a carbon copy of what actually went down. We don't know. But you're right. It does feel like another element that's crowbarred in.
Yes.
For me, it feels like these are all like-minded scientific people. He's an engineer. He's got there because
he's got a master's in engineering.
Exactly. Now, I don't know. They could have been like, he's the new guy. What are you doing? You're the new guy. You've got to earn your stripes to tell us what to do, sort of thing. You're new here. Now go away. Nothing to do with race. Nothing to do with...
make copies.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's another sort of sticky element that I don't know the actual answer to, but I feel like it could probably been handled more. Mm-hmm. Got any more for me, or shall I go on to mine?
Last one. I didn't like the very short sort of spotlight that they put on the Columbia shuttle crash, because that was huge. That was 2003, even I remember that. And it was when the Columbia shuttle tried to re-enter Earth's atmosphere and blew up over Texas.
Yeah.
And so you had the Columbia, and it was only like 10 years before, 1986, when the Challenger crashed trying to exit our atmosphere. Two horrific crashes. And I don't like that it was given, like, I don't know, like 2 minutes screen time, maybe one. And obviously the captain of that flight, or the... payload specialist, I can't remember her name, but she's an Indian American woman in this,
Kalpana Chawla,
that's it, I couldn't pronounce the name, but she has a small role in it where she talks about, you know, you can achieve this and it's amazing up there, you're gonna love it. And then you just, they crash upon re-entry, and he just goes, oh, I need to go, and he leaves the restaurant, and that's it, that's all you get of it.
It is a bit baffling. Like you say, Saraya Blue, who played Kalpana Chawla, she's had a huge part to play in this story, and herself managed to go into space and represent her group of people, which is amazing.
Yeah,
she's in it less than the whole diaper gate, like the whole struggle of getting nappies.
Diaper gate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is in it less, and it's like the whole film reeks of that for me. It's like you're focusing on the wrong parts of the film, and I don't even know the true story.
That's it. You've hit it on the head. You're focusing on the wrong parts of the film. I'm not interested in the domestic struggle. I know it exists.
Exactly.
I live that world. But I'm more interested in this fantastic Indian American woman died re-entering Earth's orbit as an astronaut.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's mad that was put on the back burner, and the family beef was put front and centre so much. I mean, it is his story, so that was obviously very important to him, overcoming that stuff. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to know how sort of accurate this was to real events.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shall I go on to my dislikes?
See.
Tarantula.
Mm-hmm.
Transfer.
Oh, oh God.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the start.
Less than 7 minutes in, there is a huge dirty bastard chilling on someone's shoulder. This is an arachnophobe awareness announcement brought to you by Adam.
Mm.
Now, it added nothing to the story. Why is there a dirty tarantula there?
I don't know, and I don't really understand what it stood for.
Nothing, just to piss me off.
Yes, they had you in mind.
quite obviously.
Don't get it.
Yeah, I mean...
Unless they were going to play Tito and Tarantula, ding, 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 and Salma Hayek come out with titties and a snake round her neck.
Dust Till Dawn.
Oh, she's mentioned in this, isn't she?
Yeah.
He says that a practical joke that Salma Hayek put, the guys wrote a letter pretending it was from Salma Hayek and stuffed it under his door saying, this is amazing what you're doing for our people, which it is. I wonder if that was true. I wonder if she actually did do the letter.
Now, that's a sort of an air of racism that I could probably believe. It's like, oh, you're Latina heritage, you probably find Salma Hayek attractive. Yeah, I imagine you end up with her. I mean, most of us would love to end up with Salma Hayek. She's a beautiful, beautiful woman.
Not in House of Gooch.
Nah.
Is it her in that?
Yeah.
That was horrific.
Yeah, the whole film was horrific. Woof. Yeah. So, yeah, anytime a tarantula pops up on screen, I'll let the audience know to avoid if you're scared of them. 6, 7 minutes in, 7 minutes, 10, dirty. Dirty, dirty bastard on someone's shoulder.
Well, while you're saying that and providing that service, let's also provide the other one, that we watch this on Amazon Prime.
Yes.
And you don't have to pay for it if you have Prime.
Yeah, and that's a feature that's going to be...
Introduced more often.
Yeah. In season two, that's a service we provide here on the Popcorn Kernels podcast. We'll let you know where you can watch these films or where you can ignore them.
You get that on this podcast. You get serviced. We service you.
Yeah, we do. My next dislike is it was boring. The film is a feel-good flick that has loads of good intentions. However, I was so bored by the first two acts, man. The coming through adversity, the continuous rejection, and the struggles of juggling everything whilst chasing dreams is something that I've seen so many times. So basically, what you said.
Mm.
I felt the filmmaking, the dialogue, the script, and every aspect of the filmmaking process didn't do the true story any real justice. A Million Miles Away focuses on an intriguing story but lacks identity and innovation. A normal narrative dampened by an extraordinary true life tale.
Boom.
So it could have been something special. It should have been something special. Great true story that I really was invested in the opening minutes until Tarantula entered the scene.
Mm.
But then the way it plays out, it's just a bit like...
Well, I can tell you something. It's not going to become a franchise from my unintentional trilogy of The Right Stuff, First Man and Apollo 13.
Well, and it
shouldn't. That's the unintentional trilogy, because you can watch all three in an order where the story makes sense,
because
the characters keep reappearing. Jim Lovell, etc., Neil Armstrong, Buzz. It can't join that. It has been... No, you're not allowed.
I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because it's too shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not good enough.
My final dislike, you've sort of mentioned it earlier, and I was gonna tailgate on your dislike, but I thought, no, I want to say what I want to say separately. And one word, cram fest.
Cram.
Mm-hmm. The film takes you extensively through Jose Hernandez's life, and I think they touched on too many parts of it that the more important achieving astronaut status stuff got lost amongst the more personal details.
Yeah, no shit. Oh, yeah. Here's me washing a dish.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I don't care. Yeah. I wanted to see more about the training and the mission itself. Instead, we had our hands held through the entirety of the protagonist's life. And I was just bored, mate, to be honest. And I didn't want to be bored because it looked like you said, it started so promising, and then it worked how it ended up to be. It was a million miles away from being a good film.
Oh, I was about to say as well, look, you're only about 200 miles away when you're on the International Space Station. But then I realised what they meant was that the immigration, working on fruit farms and then becoming an astronaut is the million miles, because that's the million miles.
Deeper meaning.
It don't take very long to do a million miles once you're in space, because there's nothing to restrict you. There's no oxygen or something. So I don't know. I don't like the title either. Let's throw that in there.
Yeah.
Fuck the title.
Can you track steps in space?
No.
Wow.
No, you can't.
Fitbits would be fucked in space, wouldn't they?
You can track light.
What?
You can track light. If you can see light, you can gauge how far it's come from. You can track light. You can't track steps.
Your knowledge of space, I've said it before and I'll say it again, it wrecks me.
Mm.
Yeah.
You can get that in space.
Well, we know from your theory, someone's boshed one out in space.
There's no gravity, which means it would be longer. It would get longer.
Oh.
They always say, no, or is it the other way around? So gravity, obviously, no, gravity can make you shorter. Yes, if you're on Earth, there's a force pushing down on you, so you're a bit shorter. If you go into space, you spend enough time up there, your spine might get a bit longer. You might get maybe a quarter, half inch taller in space. So if you apply that to your pinnae, you could say, well, I'm 5 inches down here, but in space I'm 6.
Yeah. I've got some questions.
Yeah.
What are your top 3 space films?
I don't have 3. I've got more than one.
Well, that's 3 is more than one. Go on.
So it's a mixture of fictional and fact, but I'd go Alien.
Great.
Apollo 13. Interstellar, The Martian, First Man, Starship Troopers, The Right Stuff.
I'm surprised Starship Troopers got in there.
Oh, it's got you. It's a fictional space travelling battle film, piss take, satire. Yeah, man, Starship goes in there. That's a very misunderstood film, Starship. It's a satire piss take.
Yeah.
Come on, man. It's done by the best. RoboCop. Boom.
That's a solid list.
Mm.
Mine's shorter. Just got 3.
Gifts.
One of them shares with you is Alien. You have to. The other two, Moon, Sam Rockwell, Up in Space, Lonely Boy. Love that film. And 2001 and a Space Odyssey.
Classic.
It's just great. I don't understand it, but I love watching it.
It's Kubrick, Loney. It was very ahead of his time.
Yeah,
the way it looks, it's insane.
Yes, and that's a film I would suggest watching instead of A Million Miles Away. Second question. Jose Hernandez wanted to be an astronaut when he was younger. What was your childhood occupational ambition?
It's changed so many times.
What was your first one when you was a kid that you remember going, this is what I want to be when I grow up?
Yeah, archaeologist.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, because of Jones. Well, I was named after Harrison Ford.
Mm.
So, yeah, archaeologist, they have the thought of being in some sort of, like, desert in Libya, finding artifacts and then getting chased by Nazis. Obviously, that's when the fiction part kicked
the
in.
The dream.
Yeah, the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool one. Mine's slightly less exciting.
Go.
Artist.
In what field?
Just artist, mate. I was a kid. I just wanted to be an artist. I used to like drawing. So when anyone asked, what do you want to do? I was like, I want to be an artist.
Yeah, but what are we talking about here? Tracy Emin, Rothko, Picasso?
I just wanted to draw cartoons, mate, all right?
Oh, an animator?
No, I just wanted to... I wanted to draw cartoons and people consider me an artist. That was my youngest memory of wanting to be something. I was always an artist.
What's an animator? It doesn't sound like you schneef your own farts and go, art...
Yeah, I just like drawing cartoons, I guess.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. Final question.
Hobby.
You are chosen to go to space with 2 film stars, but there's a twist. Your decision has to be based on who you think would be genuinely helpful up there and not chosen based on your personal entertainment. Who's going to space with you?
Matt Damon.
Because he's got a bit of experience?
I think he's genuinely a smart person in real life.
Yeah, I've got a couple of names here, and I'm not going to lie. Matt Damon was fighting for the spot.
He's smart, man. I've watched him in interviews where he sort of he feels a bit pissed off by the question that's been asked of him, and his response is so full of knowledge and so full of intellect that he scares me almost. And like even the way he delivers his lines in The Martian and in Good Will Hunting. He's saying the lines. It's not like he's just learnt his lines. He's saying the lines and giving them the delivery as if he understands the maths. I think he's a smart guy. I actually think his IQ is actually probably really huge. But then again, so is Gina Davis. Apparently, has got an IQ of 160. That's a duck, not a dick. From The Longest Goodnight.
That's...
Gina Davis.
I mean, I'm showing my lack of intelligence because I don't know if that's a really good... IQ score, but I'm assuming it is.
Yeah,
that's
why it's fucking huge. Yeah. 160 is huge.
What's the average, do you know?
90 or 80?
Oh.
I don't know.
That's just
mine's probably, I don't know, 80? Very below average.
A gentleman's 80. 80 sounds good.
It's not 180.
No.
They're like genius level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, fair play.
High IQ.
Well, yeah, you'd want her up there.
Yeah.
My 2 would be Daniel Day-Lewis. Listen.
At least he's believable.
If you research everything like that man does, like he's not going to space without doing any homework beforehand.
Yeah, he
like
adapts.
You know, he's gonna be learning every little bit he can.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think he's a smart dude, and I think that would help up there. And Tilda Swinton, and I have no basis for
Tilda.
That. I have no basis for that. She just seems like a soothing presence, and I reckon she just strikes me as someone who's smart.
I feel like if aliens found Tilda Swinton, they'd think she was some type of bacteria and just, like, expunge her.
Ooh.
She look alien.
That was a Swinton assault out of nowhere.
Swinton assault?
Do you like Tilda Swinton?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't actually know. I think she was great in Let's Talk About Kev. But
Let's Talk About Kev.
But I don't know. It was a hard film to watch anyway, so it was hard to know if I like her or not.
Yeah.
She's a bit cray-cray. I think the first thing I ever saw her in was The White Witch in the Narnia remakes.
Yeah.
And she did not get me thirsty for Turkish delight.
No. That's a problem.
Mm.
I like Tilda Swintz. Always have. Yep. What would you rate A Million Miles Away out of 10?
5.
Yeah.
5.
Yeah. I'm exactly the same, man. It reeks of...
But not Apollo 5.
Oh, hello.
More like Apollo 1, where they burn up. Okay. Oh, that's cruel.
Okay.
That's cruel. R.I.P. Gus Grissom, Ed White, Roger P. Chaffee.
Look at your knowledge.
Love them.
Look at you go. Love yeah, I'd go with you, man. It's the epitome of average for me. 5 out of 10.
Oh, God, all that needs to be
said.
Films.
Yeah, it's. I tell you what, I think we've said it before. Average films are worse than shit films.
Yeah.
Because if it's just average, you're just like, oh. Mm. If it's shit, at least you can get angry with it and
yes.
be like, this is why it's awful.
Here's the graph.
Yeah.
Annette.
Yeah.
And then go all the way over here and you get your Shawshanks and stuff.
Yeah, your Sevens and your One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Middle ones are like, why did I even watch this? I've not benefited from it. I can't slate it, but I also can't compliment it.
It's
weird.
It's like going out for a full English breakfast and ordering just toast.
Go get that food analogy, man.
It's just going, imagine going and ordering toast or cornflakes and a calf. It's like you've gone to a calf, get a full English breakfast, do the right thing.
If your Ibs is flaring up, Lou, that toast with nothing is probably gold to you.
But if your Ibs are flaring up, you shouldn't be going to get a full English.
That's true. You need to be near a place where you can deposit your last meal.
Yes, at any given moment.
That shit's got to stop talking about that.
Yeah, it does. That gives A Million Miles Away A Million Miles Away a total score of 10 out of 20. If you like your films to be uplifting from the start of life right up until liftoff, or if you have ever wanted to see a persistent Peña progress his planetary pursuits, then A Million Miles Away could be a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed First Man, Pursuit of Happiness and Apollo 13.
First Man, Apollo 13, how can you even compare them?
Yeah, they're in space, isn't it? Should we play a game?
Yeah.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It is then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
Moment of truth. I'm not going to lie to you. We're closing in on the end of season one. So this being episode 38, we've got two more left, and then we're going to revamp for season two. But I'm running dry, man, on What the Plot's. I am running dry. I mean, I've got one. I'm going to read it to you, but just don't judge.
I won't
and
judge.
Any listeners that are still with us, don't judge.
Yeah.
It's getting hard. And I will be asking for the fans to provide me with some What the Plot's for next season. I shall provide my private email address at another time and place. But yes, it is. It's getting thin.
Scraping thy barrel.
I am scraping thy barrel with a toothpick.
Okay, hit me with your barrel scrapes.
Okay, a bunch of vegetarians bully a teenage girl because her parents run a restaurant that serves meat. They shame her daily and lead her to try and take her own life. Luckily, she survives and they remove her from the school, the mum and dad, that is. And then the mum and dad decide to kidnap those bullies and force feed them meat and make them watch Super Size Me. But then the daughter finds them in their little torture cell of meat and feasting. And then the daughter takes the higher ground and she frees the kids that are being force fed meat and then turns her parents into the police.
All right. That was a lot and very fast.
Yeah.
I got bunch of veggies, bullies, meat eater.
You look different in the dark.
What?
I'm just saying you look...
It's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
So far I've got a bunch of veggies, bully, meat-eating person.
Bunch of veggies.
And then they bully her so much that...
Well, she tries to kill herself.
Okay.
It's a bully story, but it's based around the fact that the actual majority of mankind now are vegetarians. But kind of, it's kind of like, you know when the first vegetarians started popping up? And saying, I'm a vegetarian.
Hmm.
Obviously, now it's gone to vegans, but it's like, think of it the other way around. Say the meat eaters are the rare, are the exception, the small minority. And this one little restaurant that's opened up in this local town, the parents that run it, it's meat. It's like, oh, you want to try something really weird that you've never had? It's like when someone fucking goes, do you want to try Linda McCartney? What the hell is that? Do you want to try corn? What the hell is that? It's that for meat. So she gets bullied because her mum and dad have got a meat restaurant, and then she tries to take her own life. Meat and the veggies is just the tool to the bullying. But they, their way of getting revenge is to like give these kids like bacon and stark.
So would it be better to be a butcher's than a meat restaurant?
Wait, hold on. No, it's just a restaurant that has meat in its dishes.
Only meat?
No. No. What do you mean, a side of meat? Here's a steak with a side of meat.
I'm just saying, in this world, you can go to like a steakhouse and get a vegetarian option.
No, but
it's a butcher's, it's only meat.
No, it's not a butcher's. I didn't say it was a butcher's.
No, but that's why I'm offering, could it be a butcher's?
No.
Okay, then fine. It's a meat restaurant.
Wait, no, it's not a meat restaurant. That makes no fucking sense.
You just said meat restaurant.
I said it's a restaurant that serves meat. Like,
okay, so
you could
restaurant.
Still go in and get mushroom pasta or
exactly,
a risotto.
Exactly, so where's the beef?
But you can also ask beef? For a steak.
Where's the beef is the name of the
how
film.
How did it ever start anyway? So let's say 70s England. No one was going in saying, can I get tomato pasta, please? They were like, what the fuck's that? You either can have steak and ale pie, cod and chips, or you can have steak, or something like that. But at this restaurant, yes, you can get your pastas, your risottos. They're catering to people. You should know about this, being gluten-free. They cater to you. You go to some restaurants, some are gluten-free, some aren't. Her mum and dad have got a restaurant, and you can get a steak, but you can also get cauliflower cheese. Right. They bully her because they serve meat. They think it's cruel. Come on, before you had Ibs, you didn't like vegans.
Well,
you fucking hated them.
I didn't hate them. I'm with a vegetarian and have been for almost 10 years.
Yeah, but vegetarians, that's nothing anymore. That's like being, not pescatarian, was it?
Yeah, it's pescatarian fish.
Yeah, vegan's the big one now, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're vegan, that you're holier than now. And I don't have no actual issue with them. I love vegetarian food because I enjoy Indian food. So if you can throw in some spices, some garam masala, some ginger, some turmeric, you're going to make a great dish no matter what's in it, meat thing aside. But I'm just trying to help you wrap your head around this. She's just being bullied because her mum and dad have a restaurant that has meat in it. It's like if you go to Brighton now. Brighton is a town on the south coast of England, and it's well renowned for it being green, as in green politics. Green as in vegetarians, as in accepting of all people's race, colour, sexuality. So there's a lot of vegetarian restaurants in Brighton, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
All they do is vegetarian restaurant. All they do is vegetarian food. But in this restaurant, it's just a restaurant that does meat and veg. But they're annoyed that meat even exists in there.
Okay.
We have focused way too much on the meat aspect.
So they're extremists. In my defence...
Not extremists, they just bully her because of it. It's like if I knew a kid was a vegetarian when I was at school, and like there's like, oh no, I don't eat meat. I'd be like, what the fuck's wrong with that person?
Mm.
Like, oh, you don't eat meat. Oh, look at this ham. It's bullying.
Yeah.
It's just bullying. And they're bullying her because her family eat meat.
Yeah. No, I get it.
It's a subtext for religion, race, everything.
Right.
Man got real.
Stand down. When you listen back to this, you hit me very hard and fast with your barrel scrapings of what the plot.
I tried to
keep up.
Did you try to beef it out a bit?
I tried to beef it up, yeah.
Beef it up.
Yeah. So, okay. So it is basically, yeah, it's like you say, it's a deeper meaning. It's about picking on people for differences and that age-old thing of treating people that are different to you unfairly.
It's none of your fucking business.
Yeah, what I do is my right, and if it's not hurting anyone, then fine. And what these people that beat up this family who have a restaurant that serve meat...
They beat up the daughter, they beat up the
family. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And they want vengeance because they, you know...
Well,
really
it's forcing people to abide by your beliefs, no...
Yeah.
Leave me alone. If I eat meat, that's my choice. If I smoke, that's my choice. I won't do it in front of you. I won't do it in your mouth.
So I see this as a three-tonged casting. And I'd have Bella Ramsey as the bully child that's getting bullied because her family owns a restaurant that serves
meat. Little Birdie. No.
She's in Game of Thrones,
oh, yes.
The Last of Us.
Yes.
I think she's fantastic, Mormont. Young actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are very good at what they do.
Yeah.
So Bella Ramsey in the lead, and then I'd have her parents as Kate Winslet and Leo DiCaprio. Let's reunite them from Titanic, get them back on the bandwagon, working together in a bit more dark story, fighting on the same team. and directing a film, I'd have Emerald Fennell, who did Promising Young Woman, who's good at doing these sort of grittier stories. And I'd call the film Beat the Meat.
For total vengeance, add one cup of intelligence.
Please, leave me alone. My parents own a restaurant. They aren't hurting anyone.
A dash of determination.
Don't hurt anyone. What about the animals that are killed to feed their fucking customers?
Half a cup of cunning.
Don't do this. It's not my fault. I can't control what my parents do. Please.
Mix in 500 grams of perseverance.
Don't ever come back, you hear? Do yourself a favor. End it now. There is only pain waiting for you if you ever come back.
Garnish with a generous helping of violence and retribution.
From Emerald Fennell, director of Promising Young Woman, and starring Bella Ramsey, Kate Winslet, and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Please, please don't do this. We're sorry for what we did, please.
Finish with a side of justice.
Beat the Meat. Coming soon.
Fucking hell.
Sorry, I didn't know if we were done. Sorry. Sorry. Just redo that screen because I don't want to do that again.